It's really is never too late to learn and add new knowledge and new skills and new tools to your toolkit. Oftentimes people, you know, they talk to me because I work at a university, and they assume that, you know, I'm working with young students, and by and large I am. But you know, there's a portion of our student population, even in entrepreneurship, that are some of them are older than I am, and they're going back and acquiring new skills and trying to make a change in life. And I think that's, you know, I think it ultimately boils down to, if you have the motivation and you want to learn, there's going to be opportunities to do that. And I look at our entrepreneurship program and our Center for Entrepreneurship and all the things that we have available. So, you know, you can, like, obviously we have formal degree programs in entrepreneurship, but we also have, you know, programs that we do. We've very successfully over the last 3 to 4 years done some programs in the community where we've taken what I call the greatest hits of our academic program and boiled it down into 40 hours and delivered a 40-hour workshop, generally about 8 to 10 weeks long, in the community, free of charge, and it was funded by several grants. Yeah, we just finished the last grant just recently, and, you know, went out and delivered that type of training to anybody and everybody that wanted to come to it. We do some smaller right now, one-day type workshops, which we call Own It, which just kind of covers the basics of what does it mean to be an entrepreneur and how do I go about this. So we do those types of programs, and then we have a program for high school students. I mean, we have programs all over the board, and we have programs that we offer workshops and seminars on starting a business and growing your business through our Small Business Development Center program and our Women's Business Center program. Those are two SBA-funded programs that our Center for Entrepreneurship at Cal State delivers in the community. So we have just a whole host of opportunities to acquire knowledge and new skills, you know, in a 2-hour workshop, a 1-day workshop. I have people that come from the community that say, I don't want to get a degree, Mike, but can I take one of your classes? And yeah, we have this thing called Open University, and they can come in and take the classes just as if they were a college student. They pay for it, obviously, but they don't have to go through the admissions process or anything like that. And, you know, so we've got all these entry points to being able to get access to this knowledge. And so there really is no excuse. If you want to learn something about entrepreneurship, there's a lot of resources out there, and in particular here in the Inland Empire region that we serve. We offer all these different resources.
That's my guest, Dr. Mike Stahl, next on Reliability Matters.
Welcome to Reliability Matters, a podcast for the electronic assembly industry. Each episode covers topics related to reliability, best practices, and environmentally responsible assembly techniques, with insights from experts across the electronic assembly industry. Now, here's your host, Mike Conrad.
Thanks for joining me on this special episode of Reliability Matters. With today's unprecedented high unemployment rate caused by the economic shutdown due to the COVID-19 pandemic, many people have found themselves unemployed. While most of those who recently lost their jobs will most likely rejoin the workforce sooner than later as the economy begins to reopen, some may use this career pause to reflect on their career choice or even choose to follow their entrepreneurial ambitions and start their own companies. My guest today is an expert on entrepreneurship. Dr. Mike Stahl is the director of the Inland Empire Center for Entrepreneurship at California State University, San Bernardino. He also serves as the chair for the Department of Management in the Jack H. Brown College of Business and Public Administration and academic director for entrepreneurship. Now, here's my conversation with Dr. Mike Stahl. Dr. Mike Stahl, welcome to the program. Thanks for being my guest today.
Thanks for having me, Mike. It's great to be here.
I do a lot of public speaking, as I think you know. I speak at conferences and symposiums and workshops and webinars and podcasts and all that stuff. And one of my favorite speaking experiences is with students. I've had the opportunity to meet with your students during the Lunch with an Entrepreneur events that you've held and other types of things. And in that environment, students pitched ideas. Many of them were good. Some of them were, you know, you got a good personality, kid. Keep
right.
it going.
Yeah.
but I just love the enthusiasm, that kind of just, naivety perhaps, which, right. you know, they don't know what they don't know. So they don't know what to be scared at. Anything is possible. I just love being in that environment. And earlier this year, I had the opportunity to speak to a graduating class students at Dartmouth College, which was just so much fun. And the scariest group of students that I've ever talked to, and I've done it fairly regularly, were sixth graders. They are unfiltered and brutally honest. They if they don't like what you're doing, there's no like, well, just smile and, you know, it'll be over with soon. They let you know. They are scary, but eventually they become refined adults, I suppose. So
they season a little bit over time.
They do. They do, thankfully. Well, most do anyway. So you're the director of the Inland, among many other things, you're the director of the Inland Empire Center for Entrepreneurship at California State University, San Bernardino. Tell me about the entrepreneurship program and how it differs from what one would see as a traditional business education.
Well, that's a great question, Mike. So, you know, what we do at Cal State San Bernardino is we teach entrepreneurship and have now for about 20 years to both undergraduate and grad students. And the focus is on obviously giving them the skills and the competencies and the knowledge to be able to go out and create new ventures. But it's more than that, really. When you boil it down, it's also about acquiring a mindset and an approach. And in fact, the mantra of our program is think like an owner. We want every student, when they come in, part of it is to get them out of the typical student mindset and the way they've been sort of socialized educationally over the years has been in most cases, they go into a classroom, K through 12, and then all into the university setting. And they're basically lectured to, and they take tests and they do all these things. And in entrepreneurship, we structure our program to where it's very interactive, it's discussion-based, it's problem-solving-based, it's experiential. And so you can't just come in and expect us to deliver the knowledge to you. You have to be an active participant, and you have to start thinking and taking control of your schedule and your approach and your mindset and switching gears a little bit. And that can be a little bit of a challenge for students at the beginning, because they're not used to the way we teach. They're not used to that approach. And they're not used to having to be completely responsible for everything that they do within the domain of their courses in entrepreneurship. And so, you know, we'll build in these little interesting activities that force them to ask questions and not just sit back and, you know, just follow instructions. Or, you know, sometimes we'll leave out critical information and we're waiting for them to jump in and ask, you know, how do I deal with this? So I think that's a really important part of it, is it's not just about creating new businesses. It's about acquiring a mindset and an approach, understanding innovation, understanding how owners think, and really applying that in their career, no matter what they do. So we like to think that entrepreneurship doesn't have a context. It could be a for-profit business. It could be a nonprofit. It could be a venture within an existing organization. So there's lots of ways that you can apply the competencies and the skills and the approach. And in fact, we often point to one of our most successful students from our program who hasn't started a business yet, but he went into a large company and quickly progressed through the ranks and now manages a pretty substantive operation for a global business. Because he thinks like an owner, he's innovative, creative, he understands business models and marketing, he does all that stuff, he understands the holistic aspect of business. And I think that's really what makes us different and unique, is that highly experiential, not just about starting a business, but how you acquire a mindset and use that in everything you do, really.
Sure. I think that the key words in all of that is ask questions. I remember when I was very young, I was probably 20, maybe 21, almost 40 years ago, my father bought a small print shop. His goal, he was an immigrant, and you know, he had the American dream, have a house, have a business. Right. And eventually, he saved up enough money to buy this little quick printer. They're not around anymore because everything's digital. But he kept his day job, and I ran the business. I didn't know anything about printing. But, you know, entrepreneurs don't know what they don't know. They think they know everything, right? So they, you know, I just jumped in with both feet. And I remember one day this customer came in and said, I want to print something on glossy paper. Can you do it? I'm like, sure. And I went back and I asked our printer, can we do it? And he goes, no, can't print on glossy paper. I'm like, oh, okay. So I went back and I said, no, we can't print on glossy paper. And the guy goes, how come? I'm like, I don't know. So I went back and I asked the printer, I said, well, how come we can't print on glossy paper? Well, because the ink sticks, it doesn't soak into the paper. And as the copies stack up, the ink transfers to the back of the paper on top of it. And it just can't be done. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, well, wait a minute. How do other people do it? It was just question, question, question. And next thing you know, I took the order. I figured, okay, it can be done. I don't know how, but other people do it. If other people do it, we can do it. And I think that's kind of the beginning mindset is ask questions and don't just accept a no for an answer, because a no is based on that person's experience and things may have changed. And so that really drives that point home with me is almost everything I've started, it started with questions. Like why, and most of the questions were why not, right?
Yeah.
Just why not?
Yeah, the students oftentimes don't question their assumptions. They assume something can't be done. They assume this, they assume that. And we start to push them to start questioning every assumption. And in particular, as you noted before, you said, you know, some of the students pitched you ideas when you did our Lunch with the Entrepreneur event. And yeah, some of the students have these, what we would call wild ideas or interesting ideas. And they oftentimes will come in and say, oh, I've got this great idea. And, you know, our response will, how do you know it's great? You know, and what we ultimately will do is we'll teach them how to start questioning the assumptions, because their assumption is that, you know, there's customers out there that want to buy this product or service. And, you know, how do we start digging down underneath that and really getting to the bottom of whether it's an interesting idea, but does it represent a business opportunity? And that starts by asking a lot of questions and really stepping back and kind of getting out of the mindset of loving your idea and really wanting to know whether it represents an opportunity, meaning you're going to have to ask some tough questions and you may not like the answers, but that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a big difference between being passionate about an idea and being just hooked on it and attached to it. You have to kind of look at everything as from a non-attached perspective, right?
Yeah.
Be willing to walk away from it if it doesn't work.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the great things about our program. You know, we have our academic program and we have our Center for Entrepreneurship, and our Center for Entrepreneurship really exists to support and promote entrepreneurship both on campus and in the community. And so we're delivering programs like the Lunch with the Entrepreneur and the Fast Pitch Competition and the Innovation Challenge and our Apple App Lab that we're developing, all these programs that are there to help the students develop themselves as potential entrepreneurs while they're on campus. And then in the community, we're doing the same thing, only with a different audience. We're helping people that are either starting or growing businesses through a variety of programs and services. And oftentimes our students are involved in that process as well. So they're getting a chance to sort of apply what they're learning and also see what entrepreneurs are doing in the community that's both good and bad.
Sure. So what are the biggest career challenges that face young people today, this current generation of graduating students? And are those challenges unique to this generation, or are they just, you know, a retread of everyone has these same issues?
Well, I think that's the message that, you know, we've been delivering to students recently. And this is a unique time, obviously. And the answer I had given about job prospects and career opportunities might have been different a few months ago than they are now, but this is kind of the reality of it. I was talking with a student last week doing some advising, and I was telling him that, yeah, you know, I have enough years, you know, of experience now that I've seen all the different recessions and economic downturns and upturns and wars and, you know, cold wars and all these things. And I said, you know, it feels like what you're going through is unique. And in some ways it is, because this is the first time you really, this is like your first major event as an adult, right? You know, the last major thing that we really had was the recession.
And they were in
for
school.
For many of our students, they were children at the time.
Yes, of course.
You know, and it didn't really resonate quite the same way that now does. And so I said, you know, this is just kind of how life is, and this will not be the first will not be the last thing that you'll have to navigate in your career. These are always going to, this is kind of part of the human condition that, you know, social issues, economic issues are going to kind of come and go, and you're going to have to adapt to them. But what we know is that in these times that there are opportunities. And your job as a student is to find those opportunities, or your job as a potential entrepreneur is to find those opportunities to create something out of this chaos. There's no better word of saying it. This is a very chaotic time, but out of chaos, there's incredible opportunity.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you look at the great pandemic, at least in, you know, the last couple hundred years, last hundred years or so, of 1918, with tremendously worse outcomes than this one. And, you know, we went from there kind of into the Depression, and then World War One, and then World War Two, and then
right,
Korea.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole generation just was dragged through the mud, so to speak.
Right.
They didn't catch a break yet. That, you know, from the post-World War II through, you know, at least the 60s, we saw this huge industrial boom, you know, of a entire generation that just didn't have a chance. And yet we've made great strides industrially and in other ways, you know, which then brought on the information age, which then brought on, you know, the digital age that we're in now. So it, yeah, this is a really tough time. It is chaos. And it will produce unique opportunities. I totally agree. For those that can see through the fog and make out shapes of opportunities, you know, just slightly beyond their reach, they can reach
right
for them. And it does create a whole new industry, whatever that may be. We don't know what it is yet, but certainly
right,
people will exploit. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that in a positive way. They'll exploit the situation we're in now, make you know, and make lemons, you know, make
right,
lemonade out of the
yeah,
lemons that they've been given.
Yeah, and they may have a particular career path in mind as they're coming up on graduation, and that career path might have to be altered a little bit.
Sure.
But it might lead to some new and interesting opportunities. And, you know, I think the one constant that students, you know, pretty much know is that they're not going to stick with the same job for their entire career. And I think that's a difference for this generation, is they're more comfortable, you know, moving from different opportunity to different opportunity. And they're not so wedded, you know, to this idea that, well, I'm going to get a job and I'm going to be in it for the next 15 years. That they're interested in diverse experiences. I think they're curious, and they want to experience and explore different things. And I think, you know, given the state of the economy right now and the time it's going to take to kind of come back and rebuild a little bit, I think that's a good approach to have in your toolkit, so to speak, is being, because then you're more open to change and willing to adjust and adapt.
Sure. I'm going to jump ahead a couple of questions for my prepared questions, because you just opened the door. You gave me the perfect segue. So there's always been a trend for the older generation to critique the younger generation. My dad critiqued my generation. I critique, you know, the younger generation. I think this has just been going on for millennia. This trend seems to have become a full-fledged fad today when it comes to the millennial generation. It's become the butt of a joke, like, oh, millennials, you know. So
right,
what's misunderstood about the millennial generation, and what unique skills do they bring to the workplace and to society in general?
Well, I think in general, what we're seeing among the students we're working with, particularly now, and I can't even remember what generation we're on now. Generation Z.
Well, I think
maybe
Gen Z is the current, but they're not graduating yet. So
yeah,
I think you're probably working
with them. They're getting close.
Yeah, they're getting close, but I'm assuming you have a greater connection to millennials.
Yeah, I think the one thing I see in our students that I work with in particular is that they have a real strong desire to have an impact. They want their work to mean something. And I think you see that manifested in how they approach things. They will oftentimes want to know why something matters. Why are we doing it that way? Rather than, you know, I think back to, and I probably still carry this a little bit, where you were sort of told, here's what you need to do, and you just go do it, right? You don't say, well, why are we doing it that way? You know, and I think there's a real strong need among the students to understand the why. Well, why are we doing this? Why does it matter? How is it going to make a difference? Why, you know, I think we've seen a lot more students talk about, you know, obviously we're in entrepreneurship and we're talking about new ventures and solving problems and creating opportunities, but we've gotten a lot more interest in the time I've been at Cal State, which is now 18 years, in students that want to do something that's socially oriented, so a social enterprise, social venture that's going to have an impact on the community. And I think there's a part of that, you know, they feel more connected to social issues and making a difference in that fashion. Not that prior generations didn't, but I think they're more attuned to that. And so I know that as we work with students, I often try and provide the background and the why stuff matters, rather than here's what you need to know and you just need to know it. It's like, here's why it's important. Here's why it matters. Here's the context of why it matters. And I think that's really, really important to them. And even as you're working, I was advising a student a few weeks ago on an issue, and I was trying to give him the background of why I was telling him what I was telling him and why this is, he needed to really kind of think about it this way, rather than just telling him, you know, here's what you need to do. Just do it.
Right. Sounds like this newer, younger generation needs to buy into the why rather than just be told the why. It's not enough to pass down orders. This is what management wants. They want to know what differences are going to make in the world and what's the reason for doing it beyond just being told to, which is great. I think that's how an owner thinks. And, you know, it really is. That's connected directly to entrepreneurship, that mindset.
Yeah, and it can be really helpful too, because oftentimes they will be able to see, okay, well, all right, so we're doing it that way. Have we ever thought about doing it this way? You know, and there may be some unique ways of doing it better, faster, more effectively. I think I had a student a few years back, and he had been out in the workforce, and he called me, and he'd been working for a company for 6 months. He was kind of hired to be the right-hand person for an owner, a business owner, who was launching two other businesses, and he wanted somebody to kind of be a coordinator for him and a confidant and and this young man had an MBA, very accomplished and very, very bright. And he wanted to work. He was one of our MBAs that went through the entrepreneurship program and said, I don't want to start a business. What I do want to do is I want to work in startups and entrepreneurial companies, because I don't feel like I have the risk-taking capacity to do it myself, but I want to be a part of it. And so that's what he ended up doing. And that's how he ended up working for this particular company. And he called me up asking for advice. And he said, you know, I'm trying to give the owner advice and guidance. And he said, it's like he's not listening to me. And I'm getting frustrated. And I'm thinking about maybe moving on and going somewhere else. And I said, well, how long have you been there? And he goes, 6 months. And I said, sometimes it takes longer than that to build a relationship and trust. And so be patient, because it's not that he's not listening, but you know, you're new. You haven't proven yourself yet. And so he wants to see a little, tread worn off the tire, I'm guessing, before he's going to take every suggestion from you, you know, that kind of stuff. I said, you know, just be patient and let that relationship build. Keep building it. Keep providing your input, because one day he's going to turn to you and say, I need you to go. That's a great idea. Go do it. You know? And I think that's, you know, part of what the students of this generation have to kind of also have is that patience, you know, start to cultivate a little of that patience that, you know, they have a particular way of doing it, but also the people they're working for are going to have a particular way of doing it. And you kind of have to find ways to navigate that. Both parties really have to find ways to navigate and to get the most out of that relationship. Because if I'm a business owner or a manager, I want to get the most out of my people and have them be excited and motivated. And if I'm an employee, I want to be able to make a contribution and understand why we're doing things. And so I think both sides of the equation have to kind of adapt a little bit. And on the student side, I always tell them, you have to be patient, and you also have to, you know, you have to be ready when your time comes, and it will come. You have to be ready to jump in and do it. And don't be discouraged if, you know, the first 9 times you make a suggestion, it isn't taken, because it might be taken on the 10th, and then you got to make it happen.
Right. Yeah. Be prepared to go when that light turns green.
Yeah.
I have, over the many, many years, you know, kind of mastered the art of what I like to call guided discovery. When I'm working with people where if it's not their idea, it's not going to happen. And right. You want it, you know, short of a Jedi mind trick, right?
I mean, yes.
You know, you kind of guide them to the discovery. So it's their idea, but they've been kind of following you one, you know, every step along the way. And then they get the idea, and then you're, you know, all your job is to do is say, wonderful idea, boss, let's do it.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are those who will listen and there are those who won't, but there are always ways to get their point across. I think anyone who wants to work in a startup, to me, a startup is like driving in a car with no doors and no seatbelts down a very bumpy road. You are very close to the edge all the time, and the dangers are in sight versus a large established, say, big aerospace company where it's probably even more dangerous from a career standpoint. You could lose your job in a heartbeat, not even see it coming because you're insulated and protected, you know, well within the cubicles. On a small business, in a small business, everything's happening right in front of you. You can't like isolate the employees from, you know, the bank's calling and, you know, and asking for money or whatever, and or parts not coming in because you haven't paid the bill. So it does take a little bit of a strong stomach. You almost have to have an entrepreneurial spirit just to work in a startup environment, even if it's not your business, right?
Definitely so. Yeah, and I think, you know, and one of the things I talk to students about is this idea of, and part of this thinking like an owner is also understanding that you are a brand. You as an employee, if you're going to work for a larger company, you have a brand that is going to be recognized within that organization. And you, as the owner, are going to determine what that brand is. And you're going to, that the value of that brand is going to be the difference maker in your career at certain junctures. And, you know, if you're thinking like an owner, you're developing relationships, you're learning more about the business than just your job. You're trying to see how you can help other people. You're doing all these different things, what I call going beyond the pay, because you're not going to get compensated for a lot of this stuff. But think about it as an investment in your brand, who you are. And, you know, when those difficult decisions come down about who we need to promote or who we need to let go, you want your brand to be there. You as a person where they go, well, we can't let Mike go because, you know, look at all the things that Mike does or has done that have helped us as a business. And, you know, gosh, Mike worked on that project and he wasn't even supposed to be on that project, but he volunteered for it. You know, you want to create that brand equity, essentially, that's going to help advance your career and create those connections and those resources. I often, with my students, tell the story of the Flaming Hot Cheetos. I don't know if you're familiar with the story behind the Flaming Hot Cheetos.
I don't think so.
Well, the Flaming Hot Cheetos from Frito-Lay were developed and, you know, it's, I think still now it's still their best-selling snack product, but that came from the Cheeto. The Cheetos were already out there, but the Flaming Hot Cheeto was a new product. And it came from a situation where the CEO of the company sent out a message to all the employees and said, I really need every employee in Frito-Lay to start acting and thinking like you're an owner of this company and let's help us build a better company. And in the Frito-Lay plant in Rancho Cucamonga, the entire plant heard that message and one person acted on that message. It was the janitor.
Oh, wow.
And the janitor, Richard Montañez, came up with the idea for Flaming Hot Cheetos and pitched it to the CEO. And as he went about that process, he learned, you know, first he said, I have to learn more about the company. What do we do? Where do we sell our products? Why do we do things the way we do? I was just a janitor. I didn't know any of this stuff. I just cleaned the building. But he learned more about the company and how they made their products and sold their products and, you know, what they charged and who their markets were and where they sold everything. And, you know, and he learned about business plans and marketing strategies and did all that stuff. And he pitched his idea and ultimately, as you know, the rest of this is, as they say, is history. Richard's a vice president of PepsiCo now.
Right. He cleaned up in more ways than one. Right.
Yeah. And, you know, now they're making a movie in Hollywood about his life. But it started because a janitor took the initiative and went beyond his job to learn more about the company, to figure out how can I make a contribution to making this a better company. Mm. And it changed the company and it changed his life.
He thought well beyond his position, which is amazing.
Right. Yeah.
I've always thought that being entrepreneurial comes more from a mindset than an education. And I don't think I'm completely wrong or completely right on that. Can anyone be an entrepreneur, or does one need to at least start with a particular set of ingredients?
Well, it's the old, Mike, it's the old born versus made discussion. And, you know, we all are who we are by birth, the genetics, and then we're formed in social processes, you know, being raised by our parents and our family and our school experiences, and all of that comes together in kind of an interesting, you know, stew, if you will. And, you know, some people by nature are more kind of adventurous, more have a higher propensity to take risks, you know, and some of that will get, some of that is natural for some people. For some people, it's, they have to develop that ability to take risks. Sometimes people are adventurous and risk-taking oriented, but maybe the educational system kind of drills that out of them a little bit over time. So you have this really interesting mix of DNA and socialization processes and experiences that kind of shape who we are. And but I also like to think that it could be a mindful process as well. Some of my students have said, you know, we'll take some assessments on, I'll use risk-taking propensity as an example again. We'll take some assessments and they'll come back and their risk-taking propensity will be below average. And they'll say, well, you know, if I'm going to be an entrepreneur and I'm not comfortable taking risks, what am I going to do? And I said, well, there's multiple options here, right? One is that you learn how to develop some risk-taking propensity, and or you come to the conclusion that you don't like taking risks, but now you're going to be a part of a team rather than an individual venture, whatever it is. But I said, there's ways that you can potentially develop this tolerance for risk taking. And that's, it's like developing a muscle. It can be done. And you can almost approach any of the characteristics or traits that entrepreneurs tend to exhibit in that particular way. And it can happen over time. It can be a mindful process. It can happen kind of subtly as you're gaining experiences. And it can also be, you know, very situational. I always tell my students, I tend to have very, very little issue taking risks in the business setting, but socially, I'm less of a risk taker, right? So it can be situational. And so I like to think that students can acquire a mindset, they can acquire these competencies and be able to do these things. But ultimately, what the difference maker is ultimately, and I tell the students this, is like, I can give you everything, but I can't give you the desire and motivation to go do it.
That's perfect.
Right? You, that has to come from within. You have to be, I could train you to be a classical pianist, but if you don't have the passion and the motivation to do it, it's just a skill set that you have that you don't deploy. And you, and even if you do it, you won't, if you don't have that passion, you're not going to enjoy it. So you have to be, it really has to come from within ultimately. And as students have said, well, what's the hardest part of entrepreneurship? And I said, it's taking the first step.
That's right.
Because that's where that motivation and passion comes in. If you don't have it, it's tough to take that first step because you're stepping into the unknown. And that's a scary thing unless you feel pretty confident about the, and you feel committed and you feel like, this is what I really want to do. And even if it doesn't work out, I don't care. I'm going to do this. And you also have to get used to the fact that realistically, you can learn as much as possible, be very well prepared, do everything right, and still fail.
I'm absolutely convinced that you had your IT students hack my computer because you know exactly the next thing I'm going to ask you. My experience as an entrepreneur tells me that entrepreneurs are among the worst assessors of risk. So considering that, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, considering that 20% of small businesses fail within their first year, 30% by year two, 50% by year five, and 70% within 10 years. Those are just statistics. Us entrepreneur types need to evaluate risk differently, or we do evaluate risk differently than just mere mortals, or we would never start a new business, right? If someone, if you went to Vegas, I've always said this when I talk to students or friends about business. If you're running a business and you're a young new business, if you could just be in the black by a buck, that's a success, right?
Right.
You're just trying to not be in the red, right? So let's assume at any given moment, between your bank guarantees and, you know, your signature on things and the lease for the building and whatever, say you're on the hook for $1 million in AR and all that. You're on the hook for, or AP rather, you're on the hook for $1 million. So you have $1 million at play. And that year, your after-tax profit net is $100,000. Most people would go, you know, put your hands up. This is amazing, right? Do a happy dance. We're $100,000. But imagine if you're in Vegas at a table and, you know, the worst odds in Vegas are slightly under 50-50. Say you're playing roulette. You're playing the outside of the table. It either lands on red or black, or it lands on odd or even, or high or low. And the odds are very close to 50-50, just slightly under, probably 49-51. And so you double your money. You put a dollar down, you get a dollar. You put $10 down, you get $10. So you double your money. Those are the worst bets in Vegas. If you play inside the table, it's 35-1. Imagine a table game in Vegas where you put down $1 million for the chance to win $100,000. Right? Yeah. Nobody would be at that table. Right. It would be social distance to the max, right? Nobody would be at that table. But us entrepreneurs, us business owners, we do that every day. We bet huge sums of money for small sums of money. So it's more than the money, at least in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's
hope,
it's dreams, it's passion, it's the thrill of the hunt, you know, the risk, you know, the adrenaline, all that stuff. Which is great, because any person who evaluates risk just dispassionately would probably never start a business because the odds are so far against them.
Right. I think there's several things at work, and I'll share a couple of things. One is I was working with a doctoral student about 12 years ago, and this was a very accomplished professional. He was a surgeon. He was an angel investor. He had multiple medical technology startups under his belt, and he was getting another degree. Who knows why, right?
Because he could.
And but he was particularly interested in entrepreneurs, and so he was doing some interviews on a larger project. And one of the questions he asked, 50 entrepreneurs he interviewed, and one of the questions he asked was, "Do you gamble? As in, do you play games of chance?" And 49 out of 50 entrepreneurs answered no, they do not. And his follow-up question was why? And they said, because we don't want to do things where we don't have some larger control of the outcome. In other words, we know it's a risk starting a business, but we feel like we have more control of the outcome than just putting the money down on red or black, right? That we're contributing, and we're either going to fail or succeed. And it's going to be, we'll be able to walk away and say, it worked because I, myself and my team did it, or it didn't work because I didn't do what I needed to do. But that was a risk they were willing to take, but they weren't willing to risk their money kind of blindly. So it brings up this other interesting question, and this is what we talk about with the students, that entrepreneurs, good entrepreneurs, are ultimately really good risk mitigators. In other words, what they do looks incredibly risky to the outside world. But to the entrepreneur, him or herself, what they've done is they've gone through a process where they've kind of feel like they've stacked the odds in their favor and minimized the risk. They've done a variety of things. They could have done the lean startup process, which we teach, that allows them to get out of the building and talk to people and interview, do customer interviews and build a prototype that they can, you know, build it, measure responses and learn from the customers and do iterative processes like that to where they get to the point where they've reached a go decision. So there's lots of things that they can do that would mitigate the risk. I think one of the reasons why business failure rates are so high is because a lot of those businesses should have never been started in the first place.
Oh, absolutely. I can't tell you how many times my wife and I go to a strip mall or something, and we see some just lame store. And we're like, okay. And we look at ourselves and go, okay, 3 months, 3 months.
Yeah.
And
right.
The signs.
Yeah.
Up,
it,
right.
It didn't represent an opportunity.
That's right.
And it may have been an interesting idea, but it didn't represent an opportunity. And most people don't have the the knowledge and the tools to be able to make that assessment. And oftentimes in popular culture, they're taught the wrong thing. And so that's one of the things that we, you know, we work a lot with our students on is, you know, first you have to come up with, every business starts with an idea. So you got to come up with ideas, which means you're going to have to be good at observation, problem solving, creativity, innovation. And then, but it's not enough. Now you're going to have a sense of whether those ideas are any good and whether they represent an opportunity. And we teach them the process to do all those things. And I think just having a better, there's a great book out there called All In Startup. I use it with my students. Diana Kander wrote it. It's a novel about entrepreneurship, but she teaches some really important lessons. And a big part of that is good entrepreneurs make small bets. And the analogy is you don't walk up to a poker table and go all in on the first hand.
Right.
You know, you make small bets over time. And then there's when the time is right and when you have and you feel like the odds are in your favor and you've got the opportunity to make a larger bet, you can make that larger bet. And good entrepreneurs are risk mitigators. They play the game, they make small bets, and then they go all in when the time is right. And I think we'd see if startups were approached a little bit differently, I think we would see the failure rates decline.
Yeah, that's something that took me a long time to learn as a business owner and entrepreneur. I thought it was all about risk. You know, I subscribed to the adages of, you know, no risk, no reward, no guts, no glory, no pressure, no diamonds. And it's easy. That's a seduction. It's easy. I mean, the rewards are great if you're lucky, but you're going to lose more than you win. And I learned over the years to kind of mitigate risk with savvy. You want to be savvy, not risky. Right. And savvy could have some element of risk, but it's calculated, right? It's
calculated.
Part of the
so that's,
formula.
Yeah, that's a great example of the risk mitigation. You're looking at it with it's not, you know, what's the old, they would say ready, fire, aim, you know, it's not that you're going to take forever, but you're going to, you have a process of saying, I'm going to try and shape this in a way that's going to stack the odds in my favor.
Right.
And if I can't do that, I'm going to walk away.
Right. Right. There's that unattached to the outcome mindset. So we talked about the skills required to start a company is, you know, maybe not quite a clear scare or being frightened of risk, being a little bit risk tolerant more than the average person.
Yeah.
But what I've learned also is the skills that are required to start a business, if not modified over time, will kill your business because you can't run on... I liken it to starter fluid. You know, I have an old 1968 Mustang and I take it out once in a while. If I don't drive it, you know, for a month or so, I usually have to throw a little starter fluid down the carburetor to get it started. Super, super high octane. It starts in a second, but I can't drive it on starter fluid. It would burn the valves.
Right.
I can't drive in first gear. You can't take off from an intersection in fifth gear, but you could certainly do it in first gear. You just can't go far in first gear. So I consider the acceptance of risk and the risk taking and some of the other things that young entrepreneurs do or new businesses do are the equivalent of starter fluid in first gear, but they can't stay that way for long. So how do you teach your students to not only have the first gear ready to go in the starter fluid, so to speak, and teach them how to go through the rest of the gears as the business goes from its startup phase to sustainability phase? That seems to be a different mindset that not all entrepreneurs master. Many sell. I think of Richard Branson. He starts businesses. He's a serial entrepreneur. He starts businesses and he doesn't run any of them. He's just the face, and he hires expert teams to run them. And when he has to pull the plug, he pulls the plug. But he knows himself well enough to know that he would be a terrible business person. How do you prepare students for that?
Ultimately, you know, so how we approach it at Cal State San Bernardino in the entrepreneurship program is the curriculum is designed, you know, to help students come up with ideas, understand how to evaluate their ideas, learn how to develop those ideas, learn how to launch those ideas. And again, context doesn't matter. This could be a for-profit, could be a nonprofit, could be a venture within their existing organization. But then the next phase is, okay, if you're going to manage a small company, what are those things that it takes to manage a small company? And then if you're going to manage a company that's growing rapidly, what are those things that you need to be doing to manage that? And one of the things I talk about with students is generally there tends to be three phases for entrepreneurs. First phase is the doing phase. That's the early phase of the venture. You're doing everything. It's you and just a very small team, if anything, and you're doing everything. You're making sales calls, you're shipping the product, whatever it is, you're doing everything, right? As the business starts to become successful and grow, pretty soon you're managing people. Maybe it's a small team. Maybe you got 15, 20 people that work for you. And now you're not only are you still doing a little bit, but you're now managing. If it continues to grow, pretty soon you're managing managers.
Right.
And you know, those managers are managing people. And what that implies is that as the company grows, the company's systems and processes have to grow with it. And we actually have a class where we teach that, how you move from an entrepreneurial company to an entrepreneurial company that has systems and processes. So you don't stamp out the entrepreneurial culture, but you have systems and processes and you allow it to continue to grow. Because as you know, Mike, if you don't have that, the company's not going to grow. You can't run it like a startup. And so not only does the company have to evolve, but you as the entrepreneur have to evolve. And part of that starts with having the self-awareness of whether you're up for that. Or as you alluded to, Mike, Richard Branson, he knows that it's the thrill of the chase, right? It's getting it up and going, identifying the opportunity, making it happen, and then turning it over to a group of really talented people that can run it. And then he'll go on to his next really cool project that he wants to undertake. Mm-hmm. And you as the entrepreneur have to understand. And some people, will say, serial entrepreneurs would say, once it gets up like 20, 50 employees, I'm out. I don't want to be involved in managing people and processes and all that stuff. And then years ago, I talked to an entrepreneur I met when I was a child. I connected with him later in life. And I said, he started this company out of the trunk of his car and built it up and became ultimately very successful. And I said, do you still love what you do? And he said, I love being the CEO of $100 million company. He goes, it's completely different from when I was building the company out of the back of my car. He goes, but I love it. I love the challenge of having to be different, do things differently that I did when I first started. And he said, I worked really hard to be able to do that because it doesn't come natural. You have to acquire those skills. You have to continue to educate yourself and add to your skill set. And so I think that's a big part of it is one, recognizing that businesses evolve, and as the business evolve, you as the entrepreneur has to evolve. And you have to ask yourself, am I willing to do that? Do I want to do that? And then you have to make it happen.
Yeah, that's very good. So last couple of questions here. With today's unprecedented, at least you have to go back to the Great Depression to see these kind of numbers, with 30 million Americans out of work, some of it just temporarily, clearly right. Once the country starts to open back up, which it's starting to do now on the date of this recording, slowly, I think the unemployment rate will drop rather rapidly, but it probably is not going to come back to normal for quite some time. So this is an opportunity where if someone did lose their job or was at least temporarily furloughed, they get a time to rethink their future. And maybe they've worked in a production environment, an engineering environment, for the last 20, 30 years. And now all of a sudden, the elevator stops at a unscheduled stop, the door opens right. And they have the opportunity to stay in the elevator and wait for it to keep going, or they can get out and shop around that floor. So what advice would you give to someone who now has at least the opportunity to get out of that elevator and explore maybe starting a new business or changing their mindset? What can they do? Are they too old to go back to school? Are there resources either in an education environment or otherwise where they can get some advice and they can read some books, or they can pursue what might have been a passion that had just been buried after all those years of working in a cubicle? What would your advice to them be?
Great question, Mike. It's really is never too late to learn and add new knowledge and new skills and new tools to your toolkit. And that's, you know, and oftentimes people, you know, they talk to me because I work at a university, and they assume that, you know, I'm working with young students, and by and large I am. But you know, there's a portion of our student population, even in entrepreneurship, that are some of them are older than I am, and they're going back and acquiring new skills and trying to make a change in life. And I think that's, you know, I think it ultimately boils down to, if you have the motivation and you want to learn, there's going to be opportunities to do that. And I look at our entrepreneurship program and our Center for Entrepreneurship and all the things that we have available. So, you know, you can, like, obviously we have formal degree programs in entrepreneurship, but we also have, you know, programs that we do. We've very successfully over the last 3 to 4 years done some programs in the community where we've taken what I call the greatest hits of our academic program and boiled it down into 40 hours and delivered a 40-hour workshop, generally about 8 to 10 weeks long, in the community, free of charge. And
free of charge.
It was funded by several grants. Yeah, we just finished the last grant just recently. And, you know, went out and delivered that type of training to anybody and everybody that wanted to come to it. We do some smaller right now, one-day type workshops, which we call Own It, which just kind of covers the basics of what does it mean to be an entrepreneur and how do I go about this. And we've had everything, you know, last cycle we did it, we had a six-year-old.
Wow.
Not six-year-old. It was a sixth grader. Sorry.
That's okay. Okay. Well, still, it was still impressive.
And, we had a 12-year-old in the program, and we've had, you know, people that were, like I said, older than me in the program. And so we do those types of programs. And then we have a program for high school students. I mean, we have programs all over the board, and we have programs that we offer workshops and seminars on starting a business and growing your business through our Small Business Development Center program and our Women's Business Center program. Those are two SBA funded programs that our Center for Entrepreneurship at Cal State delivers in the community. So we have just a whole host of opportunities to acquire knowledge and new skills, you know, in a 2-hour workshop, a 1-day workshop. I have people that come from the community that say, I don't want to get a degree, Mike, but can I take one of your classes? And yeah, we have this thing called Open University, and they can come in and take the classes just as if they were a college student. They pay for it, obviously, but they don't have to go through the admissions process or anything like that. And, you know, so we've got all these entry points to being able to get access to this knowledge. And so there really is no excuse. If you want to learn something about entrepreneurship, there's a lot of resources out there, and in particular here in the Inland Empire region that we serve, we offer all these different resources.
And for our audience, I'll put a link to the university's website, which has your information on it and information about the entrepreneurship program. That'll be on the show notes if our audience would like to look that up. Finally, last question. I met you originally through the Spirit of the Entrepreneur Awards program. Tell me about that program. How did it start? Where's it going?
So Spirit of the Entrepreneur Awards started in 2003 when I arrived at Cal State San Bernardino in mid-2002 to take over leadership of the Center for Entrepreneurship. I was looking at different activities and programs that fit within our mission, which was really to support, celebrate, and promote entrepreneurship both on campus and in the community. And one of the things I thought would be interesting to do would be some kind of an event that would celebrate entrepreneurship, knowing how important entrepreneurs to our regional economy, how they create jobs, they innovate, they do things that really move the region forward economically and socially. I thought it was important to create a venue for that to be recognized. I had been involved several times with a program called Entrepreneur of the Year, which Ernst & Young was delivering. And I was a winner of Ernst & Young's Entrepreneur of the Year award. But they weren't doing that program anymore in our region. And so I thought, well, you know, we could do something like that, maybe a little bit different. It wouldn't be the same as what they did. And so we, that's, you know, I just said, I think we should do this. And in fact, the people at the university at the time told me that I shouldn't do it, that it wouldn't be successful and that we didn't have the funding and this, they had lots of excuses as to why they didn't think I should do it. But we launched it and slowly built the program.
Don't tell an entrepreneur no.
Yeah, don't tell us no. Exactly. I still have the email from the person that told me I can't do it.
That's great.
Anyways, not that I'm holding on to that.
That's a little inspiration, but, I'm sure. I have a sign in my office from my ex, the company I used to work for.
That
started this company, right? He said a couple of words that I didn't like, and he wrote it on a piece of paper and put it up all over the company, and I took one before I left, and I have that framed in my office. So no, I get that.
It's little touch points. But so we built it into, I think the first year we had maybe barely 400 people that came to the event. Last year in 2019, we had over 1,000 people attend. It's grown bigger, better. People in recent times have taken to calling it the Oscars of business.
Well, the production value matches the Oscars. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, and what I'm really proud of is that it's extending the conversation about entrepreneurship in the region. It's connecting entrepreneurs together. It's raising the profile of these companies in the community and in some cases nationally. And just, I think, giving it the appropriate importance that it has for us regionally. And obviously, when we did the event, we wanted to be, we wanted to build our brand as well. But it was more about how can we support and foster entrepreneurship. And it's, it's morphed into, like I said, a bigger, better event. Our students for the last 14 years have been doing their final fast pitches, their elevator pitches at the event, where the audience votes on the students. And we've had several of those student startups that have launched, and some have gotten funding from the audience, and and it raises scholarship money for our students at Cal State. So it's a really a win-win-win kind of activity. And like I said, it's the one thing where everybody kind of comes together once a year and has a great time. And where it's headed, we want to keep building on this success. It's appearing that this year we're going to have to make a little pivot,
right,
in the program, because of the, it's not going to be that simple to get 1,000 people together in November of 2020. So we're in the process of actually working that little pivot out right now as a team, and working with our sponsors as well. And the one thing I was really enthused about is I reached out to all of our major supporters of the event, and all of them said, they, regardless of what happens, they're going to continue to support the event, and they hope that we can do it because it's such an important event in the community. And so we're endeavoring to deliver the event this year, but maybe just in a little different way.
Well, I'll be excited to find out what that way would be. Hopefully it's not a major pivot, but if any event has to be redreamed, leave it to an entrepreneurial event to do that, because
Exactly.
Definitely, you'll get some definitely silver linings out of that whole thing. Dr. Mike Stahl, director of the Inland Empire Center for Entrepreneurship at Cal State San Bernardino, thank you so much for being my guest. Usually, I think the first time we met, you interviewed me for something different.
I did, yes, and, that's right. Yeah.
So it's nice to turn the tables and put you on the interviewee side. So thank you for being my guest. I know that the situation we're under with COVID and so many people losing their jobs, I think this will be a valuable conversation for people who maybe are looking for a change or hit an intersection in their life where they're reevaluating what their career paths are. I think this is a very timely conversation. So thank you for being part of it. Thanks for all you do for students and others in the realm of business and entrepreneurship. I know you really make a difference in our community and beyond. So thanks for all of that, Mike.
No, thank you, Mike. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to come in and talk to you and talk about entrepreneurship and how important it is. And I really appreciate all the things that you have done in your business and in the community as well. And the support you've given back to our students, it's just been fantastic. So thank you as well.
Just don't start teaching sixth graders, because if you do, I'm out.
Well, we did teach 6th, 7th, and 8th graders over the last 3 years. We have a special middle school program, and it was quite an experience to teach that level.
Well, I'll put my big boy pants on and be prepared if you ever need some help. Well, good. Thanks again, Mike. It's a pleasure talking to you.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Well, that's another episode. Thanks for listening to the Reliability Matters podcast. Don't miss an episode. Subscribe to Reliability Matters on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcast. Reliability Matters and other reliability-based podcasts are available at Circuit Assembly's PCB Chat at pcbchat.com and at Ascendo Reliability at reliability.fm. Thanks for your comments. Please keep them coming. Send comments and episode suggestions to Mike at mikeconrad.com. That's Conrad with a K. Until next time, thanks for listening and keep doing it right.
Thanks for listening to the Reliability Matters podcast. Join us on the second and fourth Tuesday of each month for new episodes of Reliability Matters.